On the line, I have Dennis Ryland, and Dennis has been gracious enough to share his home invasion story. I'm very thankful that he's sharing it because there is so much that we can learn from his experience. So I know Dennis has a lot of things to do today, and I'm going to get right to him, and we're going to hear, again, this incredible story which he has to tell. So, Dennis, I want to thank you for sharing your story today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm glad that I could be here to do it. I could have turned out a different way.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I actually met Dennis during my Spy Escape and Evasion course in Los Angeles, and he briefly told me a little bit of it while we were on a break, and I said, this is amazing. You got to share this with people. That way they can learn from it. So, Dennis, why don't you kind of just, you know, go into further detail than the little bit I heard on the break and tell us pretty much everything you can about your home invasion.
I'd be glad to. Normally I'd say don't try this at home, but I guess I did. So I have a kind of a stupid big house. It was February, Friday night in February, pitch black at 7:30, and my wife and I were in our home theater watching a movie, soundproofed, literally double soundproofed. Did not have the alarm on. Heck, we're home. So we never really thought about it. And we live in a very affluent neighborhood where their last home invasion was 1976. So what happened was at about 7:30, the movie was over, and I said to my wife, do you want to watch another movie? No, I'm going to go sit in bed and read. She goes down, and the whole house is pitch black, but she knows her way around, of course, and she goes all the way to the other side of the house, to the back of the house where the bedroom is. And as she's going, she feels cold air on her face, and she smells something. She said it's sort of like an oil, metallic smell, and she knew something was wrong, and her senses were on high alert. And she got to almost to the door, and it's dark in the bedroom, but the bathroom light was on, so she could see some residual, and there was a guy rifling under the mattress looking for money. She froze instantly. I mean, most people, as she said, would have the tendency to walk in and go, what are you doing? You know, that kind of thing. And she knew right away. So she froze. He saw her. She saw him, but he was far enough away that she could turn and run. And she ran back to the theater, opened the door, and said, someone's in the house. And I knew that was not a joke. So I got a gun. And I do have guns around the house. And she called 911. The house is still dark. I go down, you know, through the house, and I close one eye right away because I want to get my pupil as dilated as possible because I've been watching a movie, look, staring into light. And there's, in the garden room that you have to go through to get to the bedroom, there's a right-hand side hallway that goes to the bedroom and a left-hand side hallway separated by about 30 feet that goes into my wife's studio. And so I stood there in the darkness for a minute, still adjusting my eye, but wanting to see if there were any flashlights or lights or reflections coming out of the other side, because I didn't want anybody coming up behind me. Mm-hmm. And when I was sure that they didn't, I got to the hallway, the entrance to the hallway that leads to the bedroom. It's about 25 feet long, and stood there thinking, just in case they come out. It gives me an easy shot. And nobody came out. So I tiptoed down the hallway, and the door to the bedroom, if you can imagine, you're walking down a corridor. On your right-hand side at the very end is a door, and the door opens into the hallway so to get into the bedroom. Now, on the same wall as the door to the bedroom, maybe a foot and a half, 2-3 feet on the same wall is the door that goes into the bathroom. Well, the bathroom light was on, and I could see the reflection on the floor in the bedroom of a shadow. So I knew that there was a guy standing in the doorway of the bathroom waiting for me to come into the bedroom. Of that, there was no doubt. The door to the bedroom is a solid core door, and I knew that if I closed it and used it as a shield at that kind of an angle that I'd have, it was very few caliber guns, that, you know, bullets that could get through that at an angle. It would be just too much wood to go through. So, and I pretty much figured he didn't have a Desert Eagle, so I wasn't going to worry about it. So I stood there, and I realized if I stepped into that room, I'm a dead man. Whether he has a gun or not, I'm a dead man, because he's just waiting to pounce. So
right.
I stomped my foot as hard as I could. He then jumped out into the bedroom, turned, and fired right where I would have been. bullet went right through the glass, across the garden into another glass window. I mean, it turned out it was a 357 SIG that he had, as we found out later. And no hesitation, nothing, just jumped and fired. Well, clearly I wasn't there. He saw with the muzzle flash that I had faked him out. And I am now down on one knee with my arm around the door, and I put three shots back to him, which blew out all the windows. I mean, everything, the whole house is solid glass windows around the exterior, floor-to-ceiling glass windows.
And as you're firing these three shots, is he saying anything? Is there any
going
on?
He had jumped right back. He was super fast. The second he saw I wasn't there, he was already back inside the bathroom before I got my three shots off. My three shots were as much to let him know I wasn't backing down and I was armed and I was not afraid, because otherwise he was going to just keep coming. And he then reached around and pumped one more shot, which hit the door and ricocheted off it, not too far from my head, because I could certainly hear the whiz going by. And I reached around and got off a few more shots. They, at that point, then I hear a lot of gunfire, because what he did was, the two guys were in the house, they basically just emptied their clips as cover fire as they ran through the bathroom, the gym, and out. They kicked the doors out in the back of the house and got out. They had gotten in through a shower window. It's a huge glass window. There was no glass.
So there were two guys in your house, but you only saw the one?
Correct. And I didn't actually see his face. They dropped all their tools. The police came. Now, here's the interesting part of the story. I'll get to the end in a minute of how we caught them. But at that point, I ran back to the theater, and my wife thought I had been shot, because she even said on the 911 call, I think my husband's shot. They shot my husband. And I said, we're out of here right now. Now, what I didn't know was that there was a police detective who was on my block, on our cul-de-sac, when the 911 call came in. Why would that be? Well, we're in an affluent community. We actually painted and carpeted the police station. We bring pizzas in for them. We treat them very well, and they take all their breaks, and they patrol. We're sort of on the way between the police station and where they go. So they hang out in our neighborhood all the time. So here is a police detective on our street, and I didn't know this. So we run out. Now, my wife had hurt her leg, so she was going a little slower, and I see a car on the driveway. And I immediately think it's their driver. It's how they're getting out. So I thought, well, that's pretty bold to have their driver in the driveway of the house. That, you know, that flashed through my mind for a second. And I'm in front of my wife, and we're wearing, you know, our black sweats, you know, just a comfies. And I'm just about to raise my gun. I'm literally starting to raise my gun, and I'm just going to start firing. And a third light comes on. And I froze instantly, knowing if there's a third light shining on me, that's a police car. And
right.
I heard, on the ground, motherfucker. Now, I have to tell you, I respond quickly to motherfucker. And I jumped to the ground, tossed my gun away, said, I'm the homeowner. This is my wife. Look at my slippers, her bare feet. They're still in the house. He was very cautious, got us up, got us in the car, because he said a lot of thieves dress as homeowners so they can do exactly this. But
right.
And we were calm. That was the other thing. We were completely calm. I took my pulse. It was 70, and he couldn't figure that out. He said people come home from robberies and, you know, they were robbed 4 hours ago, and they have coronaries. And I'm just in a gunfight. My pulse is 70. And, I mean, I'm very calm. So he thought that was very suspicious, and he separated us. Meanwhile, he's calling for backup and SWAT. Two SWAT teams came in, 35 police cruisers, helicopters, dogs, everything. Meanwhile, they had long since got away. They were on a golf course, and they had gone out the back across the course to another cul-de-sac and got away. As it turns out, they drove right through the police line in their SUV, we found out later, before the police closed it off. They wouldn't even let my neighbors come back home. They had to stay somewhere else that night. And it was major. And, of course, news crews camped out on my yard for a week, and I wouldn't talk to anybody. The house was at the time for sale, so they got to see the floor plan online, and the two SWAT teams came in and clear the house. And the police officer, the detective, said to me, "I almost shot you." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "Man dressed in black carrying a gun chasing a barefoot woman, we don't even say freeze. We just pull the trigger. But you were in front of your wife." And I thought, there's something going on here. Let me see if you take direction. And you did. He said, "But had you not, the hammer was back and I was just going to pull the trigger." And I think my heart raced a little bit then. I'm not sure. And then CSI came and the other detectives came, and this started at 7:30. The house wasn't cleared and we didn't get to bed until 3:30 in the morning. And we slept in our bedroom, broken glass and windows gone and everything.
That's amazing in itself.
Well, what are you going to do? They're not going to come back. And we're also going to sleep. So I stapled up some plastic because it was February. It was freezing. And we slept in the bedroom. So next day our contractor came and boarded things up. And now I have to tell you one very cute story about this. One of my shots, because I was in slippers, I had slipped a little bit, and one of my shots actually hit the floor and ricocheted up. And I'm really better than that, but I admit it, I slipped. And the reason I'm telling you this is I said to my wife, who is very funny and very quick, I said, "You can never tell anyone I shot the floor. You just can't." I said, "There's got to be a little bit of reputation here." And we're standing in the bedroom with the police, the detective, CSU, our contractors were there. This is the next day. And my wife said something, and I couldn't resist. I made a wisecrack, and she then turned and pointed and said, "You shot the floor. You shot the floor." So the detective said, "We thought you were DRT. I said, "DRT?" He said, "Dead right there." He said, "Nobody lives through these kinds of things." He said, "Tell us about it." So I told him what I did, closed my eye, waited. Stomped, and he said, where did you get your training? He said, "I know 20-year-old SWAT guys who pee their pants and couldn't do that. Where'd you get your training?" I said, "Well, don't you watch Burn Notice and Bourne and all the spy shows?" And he started laughing. He said, "Oh, then you've been trained." And I used to write for those kind of shows years and years ago when I was much younger. And so it just sort of was instinctive to me. I was very lucky. Now, I was also very stupid. I should have just, when my wife came back, got up and ran out of the house and called the police. That's what I should have done. So grabbing a gun and going after them, I have to say, was pretty stupid. It makes for great dinner party conversation, and everyone in the whole city knows about it, and I have big fundraising events at my house, and they all want to know about it. They dropped all their tools. We got touch DNA. And we then, the police put a trace on their cell phones and their cars, and turns out the guy who was the ringleader was actually on probation and was wearing an ankle bracelet and used a lubricant to get it off. So when he was robbing my house, it showed that he was home. Mm-hmm. And they had done 70 robberies. They targeted me. I drive an expensive sports car, and they were looking for that, and they ran license plates, obviously someone inside, and any house on a golf course they targeted. And they were pretty nasty guys. They tied up a 15-year-old girl and put her in a bathtub and put a gun in her mouth. They broke the ribs of a 70-year-old man, kicked them in. They had zero conscience and zero regard for life, and evidenced by the fact that they pulled the trigger as fast as they could trying to get me.
Yeah.
And so instead of getting life sentence, they got 75 years, and I testified at the trial, and they have 11 more trials, so the DA is just doing one more so that they get two consecutive life sentences, and they'll never get out. They're in their 40s. But they were living in million-dollar homes in gated communities, and very sophisticated communication, wireless communication between them with earwigs, and very sophisticated. And the guy was very smart who ran it. And he got away with it for years. When he got caught, he became a snitch and turned all his people in so he wouldn't go to jail. And then, of course, got caught again. And all those priors that they were not charging him for, now they charged him for. So he has 70-plus counts of aggravated assault, armed robbery, whatever they call it. So I don't think he's going to see fresh air for a while.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, and I was very lucky. It could have certainly gone differently. And if I had to do it again, would I? No, I wouldn't. It's great having the stories to tell, but it was stupid. I should have just run out. And it showed disregard for my wife's safety as well, because if something happened to me, she's defenseless. So I have to say, as thrilling as the story is in hindsight, it was one of the dumbest things I've ever done. If someone's there and you have a chance to get out, if someone's there and you have a chance to get out, get out.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an incredible story, like you said, and I'm extremely glad you made it out. So I got just a few questions, if you don't mind.
Please.
One of them, you were talking about how your pulse was so low and you were calm. And there's about 10% of the population who just handles stress extremely well, and it sounds like you're one of them. But when you're creeping through your house...
I'm a consultant, so my job is stress, and I guess I handle it well. So, but I'm sorry, go on. So your question?
No. Yeah, obviously you do. If you're sitting there talking to the police officer in the back of the car, and he's thinking you're the criminal because you're so calm.
My wife and I were making jokes. We were asking him questions about their police radio computer and what it was showing and all this, and he was just... His mouth, I thought I could do dental work on him. His mouth was hung open. He hadn't seen it. So he separated us. And then two different detectives took our statements, and, of course, they were identical. And then CSU came in and verified everything we were saying. And, of course, the demeanor of the police changed instantly once they realized that this was the truth. And CSU had confirmed it. And they were then all of a sudden like, oh, my God, how did you think of this? Why did you know what happened? Blah, blah, blah. So, but again, I'm going to say, you know, for anyone listening, if you can get out, get out. Because give up the great story and eliminate the chance that your family just talks about what the funeral was like, you know, when you messed up. It's just not worth it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really
get out.
I was stupid and lucky.
So even though you are one of these 10%ers who is extremely calm, when you were going through your house, as you're, you know, crawling to find that guy, do you remember having tunnel vision? Do you remember auditory exclusion or any – did you experience any of that?
I knew that I had to get my eye dilated, and I knew that I had to look for the flashlights around because I knew if I didn't, somebody could come up behind me. I had an incredibly – hypersensitive sense. Time didn't change, it didn't shift, but my senses were all of a sudden, it's like someone flicked a switch and I'm now aware of everything. Every sound, mm-hmm. every movement, every shadow, every nuance of light, smell, the cold air from the broken window coming in my face, forward thinking and seeing the scenario play out as I'm walking down the hall of all the different possibilities and why I don't want to go in that bedroom under any circumstances. I need to bring them to me. All that was going through my mind. You know, my mind works very quickly anyway. That's what I do as a marketing consultant. But and I see things that others don't in terms of looking at angles and approaches to different problems. But this was on steroids. And my mind was on steroids because I was seeing every scenario. What happens if the door moves this way? What happens if that happens? Where if he's moving? What if he's crouched down in the dark waiting for me? I need to make sure the door is my barrier because if I expose myself, should I have a shotgun or a pistol? Everyone loves that, you know, ka-chunk of the shotgun, but wrong weapon to have because I've got to expose myself fully in order to shoot. If I am exposing myself, turn to the side because it's a lot harder to hit when you're in profile than when you're flat onto them. All these things were going through my mind.
And actually, that brings me to my next question.
Most shootings are 8 to 15 feet. And even at that, someone is nervous and scared and their heart's pumping. And if you turn to the side, you have a 50% or better chance of surviving because there's less target to hit. And they're shaking anyway.
So what gun did you end up grabbing that day? What did you use?
That's what I'm embarrassed about telling you. I had a 40. I keep 357 Magnums around the house with 38 shells in them with the blue blazers. You know, so it'll go through drywall in a little hole, but if it hits anything with liquid like a body, it'll go in small and out big. And one of them was in the bedroom, and I didn't have one in the theater because I had just moved one to a house in Los Angeles. So the only gun that was not in the bedroom or the bathroom at that time was a 380 SIG, a little pea shooter. My 45 and 9 SIGs were in the closet because I never use semi-autos as a home protection gun because they can jam. In fact, after the first couple of shots, I did have a jam and I cleared it. And it was instinctive. I didn't even think about it. But that's all I had. And if people would say to me, why didn't you fire through the wall? Yeah, well, first of all, I had a 380 SIG. Second of all, I knew, and I thought of that too, the wall then goes into a closet. Then there were solid core doors on the closet. So he'd have to be in the perfect position. And the bullet, even if I had a 357 or a 44, it wouldn't have gone through.
Right, and although it wasn't the ideal gun, the gun you have at the time is the most important gun in the world, so at least
right.
you had a gun and you weren't totally unprepared.
All I needed was that it was going to fire, because that was going to tell him, A, I'm armed, I'm not afraid of you, you want to shoot, I'll shoot back, you shoot again, I'll shoot again, and I'm not going away, you are. And he wasn't prepared for that, because their attitude is, hey, we're the robbers, we have the upper hand, and I've got a gun. Well, when someone's not afraid of him and fighting back, they get afraid. Evidenced by the fact that they emptied their clips as cover fire so I wouldn't come after them.
Right.
A lot of bullet holes, a lot of plastic wood that had to fill in those spaces anyway.
And do you still have the house, or did you end up selling it?
Oh, no, I have it. I have it.
Okay.
Now, I will tell you, I now have 22 500-watt floods hooked into the alarm system with dual-beam UV motion detectors at the edge of the property everywhere, and the most sophisticated high-resolution day-night cameras, 15 of them that you can have. So the police detective who came back, you know, to do more interviews said, anyone who's going to rob this house is going to case it first. If they look at this house in binoculars, they're going to move on to the next one, I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was glad to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you first told me this story, is you told me that you didn't have the alarm on, and that's one of those big things that so many people do, is I talk to so many people who have home invasions, and a lot of them have alarms, and they forget to turn them on, which
yeah.
you obviously got to remember to do, or else it doesn't matter if you've got the $50,000
alarm. Well, you have
alarm,
a false sense of security because you're in your home, and you don't think that anyone's going to come in while you're there. Well, the truth is, our house was completely dark because we didn't have any lights on. And they broke a window in the very back of the house. Well, we're in a soundproof theater watching a movie. A nuclear explosion could have gone off. We wouldn't have heard it. And, in fact, it's so soundproof that when the alarm system does go off, you can't hear it in the theater. So I've actually put in a very, very bright flashing light hooked to the alarm system that's in the, like a fire flashing alarm. So when the alarm system goes off and you're in the theater, you have this flashing strobe, so you know the alarm is going off, which I hadn't had. We never, ever walk into that theater without the alarm on. And, in fact, the first thing we do when we come home is just turn on the alarm. And I don't consider that living in fear. I think that's living in the world securely. So we come in, we turn the alarm on, even during the day. As a habit. Now, I'm not going to tell you we haven't had a couple of false alarms when I open the door and forget and jump out of my skin because I have the loudest, highest decibel horns in and outside the house.
Good.
I've really gone for the max on that. So a lot
what,
of lessons.
I guess, you know, well, yeah, what any last advice you could give to people, any, you know, other security measures or anything besides, obviously, not going after them. Any last advice you could give to people?
If you can get out, get out. And, you know, it was stupid to try and be a hero. If they caught me, the only thing I could do would be give them whatever they want. You know, you read all the things and of how to act psychologically, but you never really know what they're thinking. Do you get aggressive with them so that they don't take action, or does that make them take more action against you? Do you acquiesce and they could care less and they pull the trigger anyway? You try to let them know who you are and get their name and what your name is and let them think of you as a person. You know, all that works great on TV, but in reality, you have this guy who has a double-digit IQ who could care less if you live or die, and it's easier if you die because that's one less person who can identify him. And that's his psychology. Not much you can say or do to get past that.
No, you're absolutely right.
So.
All right, Dennis, I really appreciate your time. I mean, there's so much that we can all learn from this, and especially something so simple as just flipping that alarm on when you come home during the day so that you're not sitting in there in a house because you have a large house, maybe somebody's in the basement, and it only takes 5 seconds to alarm the house.
That's it. And I said to the detective, I said, if you catch in the very that first night, I said, if you catch him, do I get a mulligan? Because I really wanted a do-over on that. And he said, you know, well, I told him what I was going to do to beef up the house. I said, you still can't use nerve gas for an alarm, can you? He said, no, unfortunately, you can't. You know. So the other thing, you know, I don't have a dog, but I was thinking of getting a barking dog recording. But now the house is so secure, I'm not really too worried about it. But, yeah, if you can get out, get out. It's just not worth it. Hindsight's 20/20. I was incredibly lucky. I was incredibly stupid. I was incredibly arrogant, as it turns out, not intentionally, but in hindsight I was. I was angry. I was angry that somebody was in my house, and I was going to defend it. And all of that, all those emotional involvements were stupid. I was lucky enough to have some forethought and have my senses on super high and figure things out, but I was still lucky. It could have easily gone another way. And just having a gun doesn't mean that you're going to win just because you have a gun in your hand. A lot of people get shot with their own guns because people take it away from them. So, and I didn't think that was going to happen, but it's a false sense of security. Also, just get the hell out of the house if you can. That's my advice.
Good. Excellent. I mean, excellent advice, and now your house is like Fort Knox, so this will hopefully never happen again. And obviously, I'm glad you're alive and you survived to share this with us. So I appreciate your time, Dennis. And actually, let me have you stay on the line for 1 second, because I'm just going to stop this. But again, thank you for sharing all this with us.
Sure.